Broadway Bank, in partnership with the San Antonio Food Bank, have started their Summer Snacks for Kids campaign, providing children in low-income households with nutritious food that they lose access to during the summer. All donations go directly toward buying nutritious snacks for kids in need. Details are at broadway.bank/snacks.
I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the number of screwworm confirmed cases in Texas is now up to 4, 3 in cattle and 1 in a dog. The parasite appears to be on the move, and all warm-blooded creatures are vulnerable. The state and the federal government are mobilizing to contain the spread. We're going to have the latest. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. There are now 4 confirmed cases of New World screwworm in Texas. On Wednesday, it was 1, a calf in La Pryor in Zavala County, and we are already up to 4, including a dog in Andrews County in West Texas. To help us understand what is happening and what's at stake, we're joined by Chad L. Cross, a professor of One Health at Texas Tech University School of Veterinary Medicine. If you have questions about screwworm, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Chad Cross, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave.
What are the first things that you want people to know about screwworm?
I think people need to keep their eyes open. That's what I have been telling people since we had suspicions that we had cases in the U.S. is the best thing we can do is to visualize it. And that means keeping your eyes on your animals. And as we saw today, that includes keeping eyes on pets. If we are not keeping our eyes open, we can't be diligent in recognizing a potential threat and addressing it appropriately.
So we have to recognize that the dog that was found with screwworm in Andrews, which is actually near you, it's in Andrews, which is in West Texas. Apparently that dog was in Mexico and may have picked it up, the screwworm there. That is, we have to figure out that this is not really the screwworm has spread all the way out to where you are.
Yes, I think that's important to keep in mind. Details of the case haven't been fully shared with us, but early reports do indicate that the dog was recently in Mexico. We do know in South America, Central America, and through Mexico, as they've been collecting data on infested animals, that dogs are one of the potential animals that have shown infectivity. And so it would not be surprising if a dog was brought into the U.S. With a particular case. We do not have guidelines in place to inspect companion animals largely when they're brought across borders in many circumstances. And so that is certainly one source of infectivity into the country we need to keep our eyes on.
And we have to see how we have to be aware of these of movement of animals. So a screwworm fly is not going to fly from Zavala County to Andrews County. But if an animal is transported that has screwworm, then this is how this can become a much bigger problem more quickly.
Certainly. You know, flies have the ability to be transported quite some distance, either through flying or through animal movement. But there are some animals we do not keep our eyes on quite so well, or we're not capable of doing so, and that includes wildlife, right? So wildlife movement is another potential source of travel of these flies. Now, flies, of course, can do stepwise movement, right? They might move from one location to another where there's going to be an infestation, and from there to another place. And so you can consider those stepwise movements as being important as well.
Let's go to a caller. If you have a question about screwworm, call in 833-877-8255. And Chaney, you're on the air with Chad Cross, veterinarian medicine expert at Texas Tech University. Go ahead, Chaney.
Well, I just think that this is probably worse than y'all think, because I killed a screwworm fly in my front yard about 3 weeks ago. And I know it was a screwworm fly because they are They have a distinctive red color eye, and it was close to a regular housefly.
And where were you when this happened? Where were
you
located?
I was in my front yard. I live just outside of Windcrest.
Okay, so that is like North San Antonio.
Correct, northeast. And something that I found really interesting was the next day, I put like a public service announcement in my local Nextdoor app, warning people about that I had done that. And I posted a picture of a screwworm fly and of a regular housefly. And it was taken down within hours.
Okay. I can't address, you know, what's happening on that app, but let's hear from Chad Cross about what he's hearing here. So thank you for the call. We appreciate your information. So, Chad, what do you hear?
Yeah, I guess there are two things I would keep in mind. One of those would be that the source of the fly would be something that we would need to know. For example, we're dropping millions, hundreds of millions of male sterile New World screwworm flies all over South Texas. And so there would need to be some verification of that particular specimen that was found. It could very well have been a male fly, in which case we would not be surprised nor concerned because they do not feed and do not cause disease. So I would not be surprised that many people might in fact encounter screwworm flies, but they're males. Secondly, in terms of your local sort of reporting, if you believe you have indeed found a screwworm fly, it would be very important to call a local veterinarian or other source to get that verified so that we can get our network in place to ensure that the right information is getting out to the right people.
But the flies that they're dropping, the sterilized flies, that is in the border, a 50-mile strip along the border. That's a long way.
They have moved those. Yeah, they have moved drop zones closer to the infested areas in Texas. And so they have moved those drop zones a little further north. They're also doing targeted dropping them closer to the adjacent surveillance zones around the cases which were found, which are just, you know, southwest of San Antonio. So it's quite possible that male sterile flies are making their way a little further north than what you might anticipate.
The description that the caller gave and how she identified the fly, is that accurate?
Yeah, so screwworm flies are metallic blue in color, and they have really bright, large, bright reddish-orange eyes. They do have three stripes on their back, and so they can be easily confused with another fly called the secondary screwworm fly, which does not eat live flesh, and which we have natively in the state. And that's another reason, very importantly, that we get an appropriate identification of the flies, which people might be concerned with should they find them.
And is it about the same size as a housefly, common housefly?
They're larger, actually. Of course, there's going to be variability in size, as we would expect, but they will be larger than houseflies generally. They will almost always be a metallic blue or a lighter in color. Most houseflies are dull gray and black, whereas screwworm flies tend to be that metallic bottlefly sort of color.
I mean, in these sterilized flies that they're dropping, they're marking them, I think, with a purple fluorescent marker. So it should be easier to identify that that's a sterilized fly.
Certainly not with the naked eye, but they do fluoresce. So you could potentially identify it that way. But again, you know, we want to ensure that the appropriate information is getting to the authorities so they know where to look, and that the social media is not being inundated with cases that might not be as important to address. So again, making sure we get a proper ID is very important.
Okay, we got to go to this break. I've got Bob. I'm going to get Bob on the air with his question. And if you got a question about screwworm, you want to give us an update on what you're seeing in your area, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're getting the latest on the spread of the screwworm. It is now up to 4 confirmed cases here in Texas. Governor Abbott has stressed, and it's true, and we need to make sure that we make this point, this is not a problem with the food supply. Cattle and beef in Texas is safe. That is not the concern. This is something that is going to disrupt food production in Texas, could make beef more expensive in Texas, but it also could impact all other animals, including pets. And we keep saying that it's rare in humans, but it does happen, certainly less common than in cattle or other animals, but it does happen in people. Chad L. Cross is with us. He is with the Texas Tech University School of Medicine. If you've got a question or a comment, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Bob. And Bob, you're on the air. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, hi. About those flies with these big red eyes, I saw one of those about 3 months ago on the west side of San Antonio, and I could not catch it quick enough. But my understanding, and I don't know if your guest has an entomology background, but my understanding is some of the regular bot flies, the BOT flies that lay their eggs in dead tissue, look pretty much like them. So, you know, if anybody sees anything out there, it's probably good to get somebody in the agriculture or entomology group involved in that if you can catch one of those. Because, like I said, if I understand correctly, the regular bot flies, can look very much like them.
All right, Bob, appreciate that. And your response to that, Chad Cross.
Yeah, thanks, Bob, for calling in and pointing that out. And to address your point, I am board certified in veterinary and medical entomology, so we do quite a bit of identification of flies and other species here in my lab. And it is true, as I mentioned briefly a little earlier, there are some flies which can easily be misconstrued as being screwworm flies based on their size and their coloration and eye color, certainly. So the blue bottle flies in particular, which are very common, you'll find those in waste. You'll find them around animal waste, for example, on farms, but also your dog waste in the backyard will attract those as well. And so because of the lookalike nature of those, it is important, as you've pointed out, to try to get a local entomologist at your college, university, or from the USDA to at least help you rule out. Verification of species, particularly of screwworm, has to be done through the USDA.
Let's go to another caller. We have Sarah. And Sarah, you're on the air.
Yes. My question is, if a pet has flea medicine on them, will a screwworm still lay its eggs on the pet?
Sarah, thank you for your call. Appreciate that. Chad Cross.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm glad you've asked that. It's a very common question we get. Many people use flea and tick prophylaxis in dogs. There are two such products which have been provided emergency use authorization by the FDA. One of those is called NexGard for dogs and Credelio Quattro for dogs. And then for cats, there's a NexGard combo and a Credelio cat. And both of those have been provided emergency use authorization. If you're applying external flea or tick pesticides or using them in shampoos, those likely would not have the residual content necessary. So we would suggest you speak with your veterinarian about getting the NexGard or Credelio if you are concerned. However, we don't want to overuse products and drive up potential resistance.
Oh, DEET also keeps away screw fly on people?
Yes, DEET is effective against most flying things and also crawling things such as ticks, of course, that is, temporary. It's not labeled by the U.S. EPA for screwworm, but it will provide some amount of protection from humans for a short term.
Now, does the animal have to have a wound? Is an open wound for the screwworm to be infecting it?
Yeah, so certainly wounds are what we are most concerned about, because wounds have an odor to flies. Flies can smell that from quite some distance away, and those wounds are very attractive. However, in absence of wounds, they will also attack mucus-bearing membranes such as nodes and mouths, ears and eyes, and those sorts of things as well. And so even in absence of wounds, we still need to keep our eyes on animals. But I do want to mention, the size of the wound does not have to be what's likely in your head as a wound. Something as small as a tick bite, which is drawing blood from a wound, can be attractive in some circumstances as well.
Let's go to Jenny. And Jenny, you're on the air with Chad Cross from Texas Tech University School of Veterinary Medicine.
Hello, y'all. I am calling to ask if you agree with the complaints that the FDA moves slowly and there's a lot of bureaucracy. If you agree with that and that comment that was said earlier, and if you do, should we be concerned? And what might be going on with the FDA that caused this to occur? Unless if this is just normal, you know, what do you think about their role?
Okay, Jenny, thank you for the question. Chad Cross.
Yeah, so the FDA plays a role in terms of providing emergency use authorization of drugs. And you mentioned the FDA specifically. So I will mention that they began investigating those products for emergency use and off-label use quite early on. So the FDA has played an important role in that respect. Perhaps you were asking about the USDA and their early response. Most folks think, because it was hitting the news quite recently, that it's new news to us. But we began seeing northward marches of screwworm flies as early as 2022, in which case the USDA began to get involved in operationalizing and updating their response playbook. And so even though there's been a lot of chatter about folks not being prepared, preparations, particularly in the state of Texas through integrated state agencies, as well as working with federal agencies, has been quite robust over the last year to prepare. Of course, you can prepare all you want, but when the rubber hits the road and you get an insect which shows up, then you have to put all those actions in place. But I think in terms of preparation, we've done a decent job.
Well, I was in La Pryor yesterday in Zavala County in Batesville, that area, talking to people and ranchers. They seemed like they really didn't know what was going on. Everyone goes to the dollar store. Everyone goes to the Valero there. No signage up, no leaflets out. People just didn't know what was happening. They've picked up some information from social media or from word of mouth, but really they were at a loss. I even spoke to a Texas state trooper. He had no idea. He had never heard of screwworm before. It seemed to me like there wasn't a lot of activity.
Yeah, I appreciate you pointing that out. And I haven't been to those locations to understand what is going on. I can tell you that USDA has 75 or 80 people on the ground currently around that first case, and several hundred working surrogately in laboratories around there. In terms of getting effective communication out, this is somewhat of an issue for several reasons, but the most important being, even though some of this messaging started to get out as far back as a year ago, I think sometimes there's message overload. And now that it's actually here, finding, you know, the best, most effective ways to coordinate the response and communication with stakeholders and the public is important. If you're not seeing signage, if you're not getting information you need, the best place to do that is to go to the USDA website or to call your local veterinarian and find out the best ways for you to address this. But I appreciate you pointing out that messaging isn't getting there. The Texas Animal Health Commission would be very interested to know that additional communication opportunities need to be made available.
So one fly, what does that say to you? I mean, how quickly could this spread? What is the life cycle? How many other flies could one fly produce?
Yeah, so a single female fly can lay as many as 100 to 300 eggs, not all of which would be viable and turn into adults themselves. But you're really concerned about the larval stage, right, which is that sort of maggot stage or feeding stage. And so you can get several hundred in a wound. And that's why we want to catch this as soon as possible. Now, the life cycle is temperature and humidity dependent. And so in the warm summer months where we have adequate temperatures and humidity, the life cycle is, in the United States, about 3 weeks from going from adult to adult. And so there is some time to intercede, of course, with sterile flies to prevent more egg laying, but also in terms of using emergency youth products on cattle and other livestock and companion animals as well. So there's sort of multiple prongs of approach one can use to address this. But would it be possible for a single fly just to show up randomly? Probably not. And that is why the USDA sets up infested zones. One would expect if you find a case, you're likely to find some, but they're going to be close to that initial case. And that's why they accelerate their infested zone surveillance immediately upon finding a case, which points us to the fact, again, that immediately letting USDA know that you have a case or potential case is so important. The sooner we can surveil that, the sooner you can put implementation in place to reduce the spread further.
So we've had three confirmed cases in cattle in South Texas. To you, does that sound like there's probably a lot more?
I would be quite surprised, in my personal opinion, if those were the only flies which are in Texas. I suspect, however, that they are going to be concentrated in those infested zones, that sort of 12.5-mile radius, if you will, from the known cases. That's where you're going to find the more concentration of them. And so it would be possible to have other wounded animals, other infestations within those infested zones for sure.
How big of a problem is this for wildlife, things like deer, feral hogs, javelina, whatever you got out there?
Yeah, this is an incredibly important part of the puzzle that we do not have good answers for. Now, Texas Park and Wildlife have been very actively involved, along with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, in ensuring that our wildlife veterinarians and wildlife biologists are being trained on how to spot this. But, you know, unlike a feedlot or a cattle yard or out in your home range, for example, we do not have eyes on wildlife very often. And so oftentimes when wildlife become infested, we don't notice them until they've, you know, going to a later degree. So it's late stage infestation, which means it's likely already we have adults which have hatched out. So wildlife are a key piece of the puzzle. We need to keep our eyes on wildlife as much as we can. And, you know, that doesn't just include deer, but it includes wild boar and other things that you've mentioned.
And so when the quarantine, there's supposed to be a quarantine in these counties, but even when I spoke to people, people didn't know that. I mean, what is this quarantine?
Yeah, so the quarantine is associated with the New World Screwworm Management Response from USDA. And what it does is set up surveillance zones. And that, so imagine going to that initial case and you draw a 12.5-mile radius from that initial case. That is the fly detection zone, considered the infestation zone. Animals should not be moving in and out of that zone without veterinarian or USDA approval. And then there's an expanded zone outside of that, which they do for more fly surveillance and adjacent surveillance as well of animals and flies. But that quarantine zone is generally called the infested zone in okay. The USDA response playbook.
Chad Elcross, professor of One Health at Texas Tech University School of Veterinary Medicine. us. And thank you, Chad, for coming with us and giving us an update on the screwworm.
Appreciate being on, Dave. Thanks so much.
The Source on Texas Public Radio, David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.